Well, hello, everybody. Today, I'm super excited to be sitting down with Noah Bethel of PDMA. Hi, Noah. How are you?
Very good. And hello from sunny Tampa, Florida.
Oh, yes. I love the sun. Nice little area out there. But today, we're all going to talk about inrush and startup, and we're going to learn why Noah really likes this test. So before we get really into everything here, Noah, can you start us out with talking about what is inrush/startup testing?
Absolutely. So, you know, you've heard people talk about that the real person comes out under great stress, right? The real personality shows through. Well, we kind of look at motors with a personality, and although that's not actually possible, when a motor is started up, there's a lot of stress. In fact, it's probably, you know, other than failure, it's probably the most, you know, stressful time of a motor's, you know, existence. You know, there's a lot of excess current. There's a lot of rapid heating. So it's just a very stressful moment, physically, technically, you know, in the motor. And as a result, any weaknesses that show up that exist in that electric motor will in fact be brought to light. So it's part of the reason I like it so much. Now, we call it the inrush startup test. Mainly, it's because it's a two-part test. There's the inrush, which really we focus on one thing, and then there's the startup, right? Now, focusing on what we call a classic AC induction motor, and we'll talk about other motors probably, but other than that, if you focus on an AC induction motor, when you hit the start button for an across-the-line start, so there's no alternate power supplies or anything, just straight power being fed to the motor. When you do that, there's about a 7 to 10 times full load inrush. So if you got a 100 horsepower motor with a 120, you know, amp, full load amp rating, well, then you can expect 7 to 10 times that 120, right? So you're talking, you know, a significant amount of current that hits that motor right away. So that's what we call the inrush, okay? So when that motor, you know, receives that amazing amount of current to start this motor turning roundy-roundy, it really can be very telling as far as the strength of the dielectric, the inner turn insulation, the ground wall insulation. There's just a lot of stress that motor is undergoing. And we call that the inrush. So we're very interested in trending what that peak current value is, okay? For the ease of mathematics, if it's a 100 amp motor, we would expect it to pull somewhere between 700 and 1,000 amps on the inrush. As long as it pulls the same amount of current every time, it tells us a whole lot about that motor. It's when that current on that inrush changes slightly or even dramatically that we can start to pinpoint and focus in on certain things. The next part of that inrush startup test is the startup. Okay, now that's as important in the bigger picture of things, but that's, you know, once that initial inrush, which only occurs for a very short period of time, we're talking, you know, milliseconds as far as the really high inrush current, it very rapidly falls off to what we call the startup current. It's significantly lower than that initial peak inrush current, but it stays there until the motor gets up to speed, right? So now you've got a lot of things working inside that motor, including counter-electromotive force and torque and all that stuff that's getting that motor turning. And that startup current, it may be, instead of 7 to 10 times, it may be, let's say, 3 to 5 times the normal full load amp rating of that motor. But what it does is it pushes the rotor until it's up to, you know, speed, basically, until the right or the proper amount of slip. We're very interested in not only what the amplitude of that startup current is, but how long it lasts, okay? So if you've got, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 times the normal full load amp rating of that motor, and it lasts for 5 seconds, kind of like the inrush, as long as it lasts 5 seconds every time, that means that there's a very normal process occurring, right? The motor's healthy. It's when that startup amplitude or the startup time changes that we really start to focus in on the possible anomalies. So hopefully that kind of gives you it's focusing on current, it's focusing on all three currents and all three voltages, actually, and monitoring, you know, exactly how the voltage sequence occurs from phase to phase, and how that inrush current and that startup current act from one start to the next.
Great, thank you. Well, I can kind of hear in some of the things you were explaining that this is your favorite test. Can you go into a little bit more of why this is your very favorite test?
So it's interesting because I've been testing motors probably as long as you've been alive. And so That being said, you know, we run a variety of tests on motors to determine their health. You know, we're looking at everything from power quality to power circuits, stator, rotor, air gap, machine train, process. We're just looking at a variety of things trying to understand the overall health of this motor. And there's one test that touches literally every possible fault zone of this motor, and that's this inrush startup. You know, when I first started, the inrush startup test for the PMA Corporation really consists of just a single channel of current. That's really all we focused on was current. But since then, over generations of improvements, we're now looking at all three phases of current, all three phases of voltage. And I honestly feel that as long as I get a single baseline of this motor, if I get a baseline inrush startup test on any motor that's in considered normal condition, right, that when something acts up, whether an operator calls and says, hey, it's acting funny, or it's starting weird, or I heard something strange, I feel so confident that I could show up with that inrush startup test, do it again, compare it to the baseline, and be able to isolate the root cause of any anomaly that that motor is experiencing. And that's everything from, like I said, power quality. You know, if the power coming to the motor during inrush changes, we can tell you that. The power circuit, if there's a high resistance connection forming on one phase or the other, we can start to focus in on that. Stator anomalies, if you have turn shorts, things like that that are starting to create, you know, high, you know, much higher values of inrush than we're used to or expecting to see. If the motor's tripping during the inrush, you know, what's happening leading up to that trip? Is there a voltage issue? Is there a super high inrush that's indicating that we have lost turns in the stator windings? Does the startup current, you know, end up being a lower value instead of, let's say, 3 times the full load, it's only 2 times the full load. Instead of 5 seconds, it's taking 10 seconds. That starts to lean towards the rotor. And that's a big deal. Now, the machine train shouldn't be overlooked, right? There's a lot of things that go wrong mechanically with a motor pump combination, a motor fan combination, a motor anything combination. There's always a load that takes a precedent in terms of operations. You know, it's funny when you hear a boiler feed pump, you don't really hear a boiler feed motor. But the reality is there's a boiler feed pump that's powered by a motor, right? But everyone focuses on the pump. Well, rightfully so, even though we're looking at current and voltage, we want to pay attention to what's going on in the machine train. And although there's other technologies that are considered primary for machine train, like vibration, oil analysis, these are considered primary reliability tools as they are applied to the machine train analysis. But the electrical capability to see within that machine train is extremely valuable and very capable. Whether it's gears, whether it's fans, whether it's, you know, bearings even at a late stage or later stage in failure, those kind of things start to reflect onto the power, the current and the voltage being fed to the motor. And we can see that with the inrush startup. So again, I just can't say enough. And even like a process analysis, when you've got, let's say an elevator motor that does certain things, you know, you got a normal process of manufacturing in the automotive industry, and you got servo motors that actually pick up something, move it down the conveyor, move it over to the right or the left, and then drop it back down again. That process, if it's repetitive, can be captured in an inrush startup test and compared from year to year, month to month, quarter to quarter, and you'll know exactly when something starts to become questionable as far as the amount of current it's drawing, the way the voltage is acting, or the amount of time that occurs between the events. It's such a telling tool that I always tell people when I speak in public and we're talking about the whole variety and host of tests that our technology provides, that if I could only have one of all the tests we provide, this is the one I want.
Oh, I love that. I can see really how this form of testing can really save companies time and the mechanics who all work on everything. So,
absolutely.
And as we're talking about, you know, some companies and such, does the inrush startup apply to all types of motors?
Well, as you can imagine, since it's my favorite test, I'm going to say, of course. And it does. It really does. So from an AC motor, like an AC induction squirrel cage, if it's a DC motor, you want to know how the field and the armature work together through the startup of a motor. If it's a synchronous motor, you'd like to know, you know, if possible, how the field is interacting with the stator windings. Now, if it's a self-excited synchronous generator, you're going to change things up a little bit. And the best you're going to be able to hope for is actually applying the test to the three-phase stator windings and watch it through the startup so you know when it's synchronizing and what's happening. I can't tell you how enough how often the inrush startup is sometimes a telling indicator for a synchronous motor starting to lose its ability to synchronize at the right time. If a synchronous motor on a given load normally synchronizes in, let's say, you know, a second and a half, and all of a sudden now it's taken 3 seconds and it seems to be really, really hunting, well, we may have a problem. We may have a loss of a field, or the amortisher windings are starting to, you know, to become an issue. The amortisher windings for a synchronous motor, you know, they allow that synchronous motor to kind of act like a squirrel cage induction through the startup process. And then the synchronous field kicks in and it runs at synchronous speed. So the rotor is turning at the same speed as the invisible magnetic field in the stator. But if those amortisher windings start to become defective, and they do often, if you're in a paper mill or some type of environment where you have, you know, not the you know, a lot of chemicals floating around in the air, they tend to attack sometimes the solder joints at the end of the amortisher windings or that cage that's wrapped around those DC fields on the synchronous motor. So without question, it's very applicable to the synchronous motor and allow you to, you know, to schedule a shutdown test, which if you do things right with offline inductance measurements, you know, you'll slam dunk a field anomaly every time. So the wound rotor motor, right? You got a lot of elevators or conveyors are probably more likely. You know, very, you know, even at a trash energy plant or a shredding motor, these are motors that at very low RPMs have huge amounts of torque. Well, the wound rotor motor also has three phases on the rotor and the stator, so it's one of those three slip ring type of motors. Well, with our inrush startup, we can not only look at the sequence of resistor banks getting, you know, cut in and out by a contactors, and that's the way that wound rotor motor works. Effectively, it's you know, you got all these resistor banks connected to the three-phase rotor. And when you start that motor up, there's a huge amount of torque, and they have to control the current, so they have a lot of resistance in the rotor circuit. Well, as that motor starts to turn and the counter-electric motor force kicks in, well, now you've got the ability to contact out these resistors, right? Well, you can watch that whole thing. And if one of those contactors starts to fail and it causes an interruption or a bit of a rough startup sequence, guess what's going to see it? The inrush startup test. It's all on a time basis, and you can compare it to the baseline. It's such a powerful tool. Soft starts. Okay, soft starts are becoming quite popular. And soft starts are a way to sort of, you know, not hit that motor with quite the force of current and energy that we talked about earlier. You don't see that 7 to 10 times. So it reduces the amount of startup, you know, through a lack of almost like a drive type of sequence. But what it ends up doing is allowing it to start up slower without as much impact or degradation to the motor, which can happen after many starts. You know, there's a lot of ideas around how many starts is a motor good for. And you hear some of the designers say, oh, we can get 3,000 starts out of that motor or 2,000 starts out of that motor. Well, that's something to keep track of. But if you have a soft start, you can probably get a lot more because you're putting less stress on that motor. Again, it's got to be applicable to the situation, to the application, but still a great thing. Now, a soft start, again, is it working like it should be? And is it starting with the right amount of voltage and current until the whole thing bypasses and kicks in? You can track all that. Variable frequency drives. It's not a type of motor, but it's a type of power system feeding the motor. And a VFD is, you know, it has an extremely erratic, or in my case, kind of a strange startup process. And so it absolutely applies to them. And even wind generators. We was recently on the phone with a group talking about wind generators. And the inrush startup test, when we were doing our field studies of wind generators, was still one of my key tests. I enjoyed seeing and these were on, you know, doubly fed induction generators. So you basically got a wound rotor motor built, you know, connected to the shaft through gears to the wind, you know, to basically the wind generator itself. But what happens basically is, you know, initially it starts up, they start manipulating frequencies on the rotor circuit. And as a result, they can very quickly and rapidly and in an automated fashion, basically connect to the grid. Okay. And be supplying power. Well, with the inrush startup, guess what we can do? We can track the initial, you know, activation, the wind speed up of the turbine, and then eventually the synchronizing and connecting to the grid. That's all done automatically, and it's pre-triggered, so you can connect it and walk away, and when it's done, you've got the data, and it's just such a great comparison tool. The advantage of wind generation is you've got, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100 other generators exactly like it, and you have such a great comparison tool when it comes to establishing the reliability of those assets.
Well, thank you. And I know we've talked a lot about pros here in the inrush startup, But are there any safety concerns or other hurdles with this test?
So remember earlier I said that the most stressful time in a motor's life is when you push that start button? Anytime there's stress, there is potential hazard, right? So one of the things that we always, I always try to remind people that as much as I love this test, we strongly suggest hook the tester up, put it on a pre-trigger auto inrush, and walk away. Don't be standing near the bucket during the startup. And that's just real simple. I'm not telling most of the analysts or technicians that are trained in the field and know safety. You never want to stand in front of a starting cabinet or a bucket or a switch gear when that motor's being started. There's just so much energy delivered, and most people don't realize that the bolts that hold the doors onto the switch gear, they're not really designed to handle the possible impact that a phase failure in a distribution system can create. It's not unusual to see those bolts actually spun completely free and doors open on switch gear following a face-to-face short on a bus bar. So hook it up, set it for pre-trigger, and walk away. And when that motor is up and running, walk back up and you're good to go. So that's just kind of a general safety thing. Some more technical concerns, not so much safety, is very often when you're performing an inrush startup, you're by yourself. It's no problem. It's a standard routine basis. Now, I will say that I always challenge all the listeners that hear me talk about motor reliability or that come to our classrooms and are trained on motor testing with our technology. I always tell them that a challenge for them when they leave the class or when they leave, you know, my conference presentation is go back and do whatever you have to do to get that baseline inrush startup test. It's not easy. A lot of times operations doesn't have your number on call every time they're going to push the start button. But if you could go get into the rear and say, hey, we really need a baseline inrush on this, and it's not going to affect operations, you hook up the equipment, they just give you a little bit of a warning when they're going to start this motor. If it's going to be 4 o'clock in the morning, you show up at 3:30 and you hook it up and you're ready to go, right? Set it for pre-trigger, walk away, and go up and hang out with operations until they push the start button if you want. But the point being is, get that test, because without this baseline, as much as you hear me talk about how much I love this test, if I don't have a baseline, it really reduces the troubleshooting capability. I mean, I still love the test, it still tells a lot, but without that baseline comparison, you greatly reduce the capabilities of troubleshooting. And so, you know, that's always a challenge. Hey, work with it, get the baseline. And now, I gave you an example of when very often you're by yourself, your tester, it's no big deal, right? Operations is going to work with you or not. You hope they do. The more stressful situation is when you're involved in troubleshooting and you know well that an inrush startup test will help, you know, make the decision or give you the root cause, and there's 15 people standing around waiting for the results. Now that's stressful. And so one of the things I always suggest as far as a concern or a hurdle is plan ahead a little bit. Practice before you actually perform this. If you've never performed a six-channel inrush startup test, you don't want to do it in front of 15 people because, you know, mistakes can be made. As long as you got the right nameplate, our software is going to try to alert you to the fact that, hey, we don't think that you've got the right current probe selected. And that's important, right? Because when you're talking about a 500-amp motor, and you're expecting 3,000 to 4,000 amps of an inrush, if you don't select the right CTs, you will overdrive the CT current measurements, right? So in other words, it's gonna clip it. You'll never actually see the actual peak because you overdrive the meter. You're not gonna hurt anything, you're not gonna break anything, but you're gonna be standing there trying to tell 15 people why, oops, I didn't select the right probe, and as a result, we don't know what the actual inrush was. You can still kind of maybe look at the startup and try to figure out how long it took and have some troubleshooting. But so practice first before standing in front of 15 people for a one-time capture. And sometimes that's the only opportunity you get, especially if the motor trips every time they push the start button, right? You want to be able to capture that to the trip, find out when it's happening, what's the startup current, what's the time. So that's probably about it as far as safety and hurdles.
No, I think it does have some great safety features, and I believe any test that, you know, we start, it's very important to understand the baseline before you just start jumping in there and testing too, just to be safe altogether.
I agree.
Well, and Talking a little bit about variable frequency drive, how does this apply to them directly?
So great question. You know, the variable frequency drive popularity is vertical, right? Everyone recognizes that there's a, kind of like a soft start, but a little different. There's a controlled startup. So it's healthy for the motor. You're not going to see big inrushes. In fact, there's no inrush, where a soft start might start, with a limited or a partial voltage. There are a couple different designs, but the variable frequency drives, go from like zero voltage up to full voltage in a ramped fashion. And so when you look at those startups, they're, I hate to say ugly, but they're very different compared to a classic across the line start. But you got to, they're still important to catch. You know, how long does it take that VFD to ramp up to full voltage? What does that voltage look like? Are the three phases balanced? Or does it look like our line side drive and our load side drive, technologies, whether they're, transistors or whatever, are they diodes? Are they all working like they're supposed to, right? And you want to be able to see that. One thing that's important about variable frequency drives is that because they take so long to start up, if you normally catch a cross the line start in 5 seconds because of the inrush hits, the startup's over in 2.5 seconds, and you're at steady state in an unloaded fashion probably before 5 seconds. And so there's no reason to catch a 60-second inrush if the data you want to look at occurs in 3 or 4 seconds. So with a variable frequency drive, there's always a longer approach to startup, right? So what you're going to want to make sure and do in the software, and this kind of goes back to practice before you stand in front of 20 people, make sure that you adjust the pre-trigger startup time. So when you set it up for pre-trigger and you say go and you walk away, well, it's basically streaming data through the test equipment, right? So it waits till it sees a value that it wants to trigger the save. And so for the variable frequency drive, it may be, for a 100-amp motor, you may want to say, okay, go ahead and trigger the save at 50 amps, okay, or 25 amps. And so what you're going to do is adjust the amperage pre-trigger so that when it reaches that point, that it starts to save the data. Well, you don't want to miss 3 or 4 seconds before that save starts, right? So you have to adjust the approach or the pre-trigger save time. These are just small little things that you pick up as you use the technology or go through the training. But that's still, for any technology you're using, that becomes important. It is a very slow approach to the running speed. So that's probably it. Again, people use them on VFDs all the time. One other thing to be aware of is that, for various tests, inrush startup, not as much because it's more during the initial startup. But if the variable frequency drive is running at a very low frequency, make sure you understand the limitations of any CTs or the voltage parameters that may exist in your technology, whether it's the PNA technology or any technology. Lower frequencies can mean limitations, and you just want to understand that. So that's the world of variable frequency drives. Like I said, they're showing up everywhere. It used to be, DC motors were pretty commonly the motor class that you'd expect to see in certain industries, steel and aluminum, things like that. But the VFDs, not only are they improving and delivering very good variable torque and very strong torque, they're not 100% equal to DC in that matter, but size wise and maintenance wise, it's just, they're hard to argue with. So they're not going away, and it's nice to know that my favorite test can be used very productively towards the analysis and health assessment of those variable frequency drive motors.
Well, Noah, thank you so much for enlightening us on your favorite test and the inrush startup. Today, before I let you go, is there anything you want to let our audience know?
Well, I'm sure I'm not the only one that loves this test, but I know we have some webinars coming up with CBM Connect in the near future. If this subject is really one of excitement to your listeners, they can always try to convince us to come back and do a webinar at some point on it. And of course, we're going to be up in Indy and at the big conference. And so I'll be there behind the, standing in the booth with a big smile on my face. And I've got a presentation to make while I'm there. So if someone wants to dive into the inrush startup test, it's not hard to get me into that conversation. I'd be happy to hang out with them at Indy at the conference.
Yes. Well, any of our listeners, if you are interested in having Noah have a webinar on this, comment below. If you are interested in coming to the conference, CBM and Reliability Live Connect Conference, message us at info@mobiusconnect.com, and we have a special offer. We can get you a free pass if you mention Noah to us in your email. We would love to extend that to you. So Noah, thank you so much again for your time today. Hope you have a good rest of your week.
Thank you, Kim.